Keep Talking exists to have conversations that might help to make a better society and a better culture. I believe that each guest has important information and stories to make public. This is the Keep Talking podcast. To support it, please take a second and subscribe to the show. It helps to make this content possible. Choose a woman who chooses you. Choose a woman who chooses you. And I wondered if we could kick the conversation off with having you give a little bit more context to what that means to you and why you think that's an important idea.
All right. Yeah, that's not the quote I thought you were going to pick, but let's go with it. It's I love it. It's not original with me. I'm going to give credit where credit's due. I heard David Data say that in a workshop. Oh, I don't know, 17 years ago, maybe. Maybe not even that long ago, but it's been a while back. And, he's a brilliant teacher, you know, no matter what. And if your listeners are not familiar with The Way of the Superior Man, I think anybody that listens to podcasts that orient towards men and masculinity, they probably have either heard of or read The Way of the Superior Man. So I was at this workshop and it came at an interesting time in my life. I discovered The Way of the Superior Man maybe a year or two after my second divorce. So I was in my late 40s, pushing 50, out there in the dating world for the first time, really since college. And I sucked at it in college. My way of connecting with women was using what I call nice guy seduction. In class, I'd try to stand out by, you know, being smart and, you know, knowing the questions to the professor. Usually the woman I'd pick couldn't be too good looking. It couldn't be too bad looking, just not non-threatening, try to make an impression on her, ask her questions, try to get to know her, listen to her talk, maybe, offer to do things for her, maybe eventually go, I don't guess you'd want to go out with me sometime, would you? Really I'd pick them because they were non-threatening and I could make an impression on them and get them to like me. And then once I got a girlfriend, I stayed way too long because I didn't really know how to, I had girlfriends through high school and college, but, I just didn't really know how to date, how to go out and find the women that would bless my life. So again, once I got one, if she wasn't too bad, I hung on way too long. So I've been married for a total of 25 years to two women. Both of whom had a lot of good qualities, but I should not have dated either one of them more than about three dates. But I was married to them for 25 years. My first wife had my son, and my second wife was who I was married to when I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy. So I'm grateful for both of them. They just were not great matches. But so when I got divorced in my late 40s, I thought, okay, if I don't want to just repeat the same thing over again, I got to do things different. And I knew I had to become a better picker. And I had to become a better ender. And just being a better picker meant I had to learn how to date, right? And so, I read The Game and guys gave me videos of, David D'Angelo and Double Your Dating. And I went to school. I learned, and I quickly realized I didn't like pickup. I didn't like just walking up to the hottest woman in the room and, peacocking or nagging or, running hypnosis or NLP or magic tricks or poll questions. It just seemed corny. And, I call those guys geeks with techniques. They have no social skills whatsoever, but they can peacock and nag and dread game and run red pill stuff on them. So I just didn't appeal to me. I really wanted to be just a lot more conscious in the process. And so I really just worked to be more of a social animal and just interacting with people. And I learned a lot and quickly found out that a lot of women sent me signals of attraction. I didn't have to seduce them. I didn't have to, I didn't have to go pound on closed doors trying to get the door to open, i.e. a woman who was hot, did not know I existed, and had 25 other guys in any given moment vying for her attention, right? So I did learn to date much more effectively, not using the nice guy seduction. And also learned, like I said, being a good ender. I quickly found out being a good ender covers a multitude of sins of being a bad picker. Because if you think about it, dating actually is a process of making a lot of bad picks. Mm-hmm. Guys will say, Robert, I don't know what's wrong. I keep going on all these one and done coffee dates. And I go, well, you must be doing it right. That's how it's supposed to work. Rarely do you go on a date and that woman becomes your wife of 50 years, right? It just rarely happens. It's normal, especially in today's dating world, you know, to go on a lot of dates. Everybody has lots of choices nowadays. Nobody tends to latch on right away. We can talk more about that if you want. Why, with all the technology we have, nobody's in relationship and nobody's getting laid these days. It's kind of a paradox. So I was learning how to be a better picker, learning how to be a better ender. And when I was at this workshop with David Data, and, you know, he said a lot of things that were just really, you know, just mind-blowing. But he said that simple line, choose a woman who chooses you. And I had to ponder that for a moment, but quickly it became pretty clear to me is that, for example, in both of my previous marriages, I was constantly trying to get my partners to choose me. I mean, they're already married to me, but like with my first wife, she'd get upset about something. I never knew what. And to this day, I still don't know what she used to get upset about. I mean, I wasn't perfect, but she never would tell me. She would clam up and withdraw, and I'd have to chase her and try to figure out what the hell did I do? How do I make it back? How do I get it back to good? And then my second wife, I mean, she could go into a mood, a funk, get angry at me. And that could last for weeks, months, even years, right? And, you know, after a while, I just get tired of chasing her. And just the last 5 years of that marriage, I just coexisted with her because it was obvious she wasn't choosing me. I mean, this is the woman who on her honeymoon announced, aren't you glad now that we're married, we don't have to pretend to like sex? I'm thinking, wait a minute, you were choosing me sexually before we got married. What changed? So when I heard Data say that, choose a woman who chooses you. Now, there's two ways you can go with this. And the way most men go is, oh, the only women that choose me are like fat, unattractive, and older. Right. That's usually what most guys go when they hear that, choose a woman. So basically, you know, the only women that, you know, that match with me on Tinder or Bumble or Match.com, I'm not interested. Okay. And of course, every guy, you basically have, you know, on any given site, you have thousands of men, you know, competing for the same few women attention. And guys think, why doesn't that work better for me? Well, you know, whatever that ratio is, whether it's 1,000 to 1, 10,000 to 1, 100,000 to 1, guys competing for the same few women's attention. But that's what we want, right? We want the ones that everybody else wants based purely on physical appearance, right? I've been saying for a while, the biggest mistake men make is linking a dopamine hit to the brain that we get when we see an attractive woman. It's wired into us evolutionary. The biggest mistake we make is linking that dopamine hit to the idea of she must be good in bed and she must be good girlfriend material. Mm. Those are all three independent things that have nothing to do with each other. So basing, oh, you know, she turns me on, therefore I want her. You know, and I want to have sex with her and I want her, you know, to hang out and be my girlfriend. You know, it's just a bad dating strategy, but it's the one we all use. We're guys, right? We just have to know that that's what is going to be our initial draw to a woman. So when I say choose a woman who chooses you, we think, well, you know, if on Match, I know on Match.com, it was always women 10 years older than me, kind of overweight. That would, you know, message me, like me. And you know, I'm a guy, you know, I've never chased younger women. And other than my second wife, who was amazingly hot and amazingly horrible in bed and amazingly horrible as a partner, but she was hot. Everywhere we went, people say, that's your wife? Uh-huh. And everybody would say the same thing. She's gorgeous. And she was. And she was terrible relationship material and terrible in bed. And, you know, I don't want to go into more detail than that, but there was no link there. So I've never chased hot women, never chased younger women. But here's what I found, going back to Data's quote. A quote I thought you might bring up is one that I know Chris Williamson loved, because I've heard him repeat it more than once. And whenever I give it, especially to a female dating coach that works with men, they all go, they all do. Yes. But I said that the feminine, you know, when I talk about feminine, women, babies, dogs, cats, money, opportunity, adventure, everything that's not nailed down in the cosmos is feminine. Everything is moving and in a state of, you know, coming and going. That's feminine. The feminine is highly attracted to a man who's comfortable in his own skin, knows where he's going, and looks like he's having a good time getting there. Okay. So what happens with men is we think, well, you know, according to Red Pill, if I'm not alpha, if I don't have this V-shaped body, if I don't have the big jaw, if I don't have the big muscle, six-pack abs, you know, six-figure plus income, I'm not going to get the hottest women. But we've bought into a myth that that's not true at all. Because women tell me things like, oh, Robert, you know, I'm so attracted to your bald head. And I go, I'm not bald, I'm shaped. You know, I just say that to say dumb stuff. Or you have kind eyes. Or Robert, your hands are so sexy. I'm going, what the fuck? You know, what about my hands are attractive to a woman? Oh, you have such kissable lips. Oh, okay, I'll go with that. The stuff that really does attract women is often beyond their conscious awareness. And I promise you, it's beyond red pill psychology of what we think will attract what they call quality women, i.e. young and hot. Well, how that makes them quality, I'm not quite sure. But, you know, we all know that, right? That's quality women. They're young and hot. Again, we assume they're good in bed. We assume they're good in relationship. No correlation. So that they don't have to be either of those if they're young and hot. They just don't have to. You know, we'll still buy them trips to London and Madrid and, you know, just without them even putting out or even like, you know, talking to us. There's websites for that. So what I found is that if I'm living life on my terms, if I like me, if I get up every day in a good mood, knowing, you know, just excited to, you know, waking up in the morning, not knowing how my day's going to end, knowing it's going to be an adventure, knowing I'm going to make a difference in the world, knowing life's interesting, I'm taking good care of myself, I like myself, I'm happy with me, I'm living on purpose, I enjoy my life. I've come to realize that makes me highly attractive to all things feminine. Now, I don't have to go pound on any closed doors. I can choose from a multiple of open doors. And again, against the logic that men have that go, well, if I choose a woman who chooses me, I have to go for fat, not attractive, and old. I found the truth to be the exact opposite. That when I'm just living life on my terms and not chasing beauty, not chasing quality women, not trying to get laid, I have no problems getting laid. I have no limit to the choices I have of interesting, fun, kinky, crazy women. And the majority of the women that come on to me are significantly younger than me. I mean, my wife points that out regularly. My wife's 22 years younger than me. And she keeps saying, are you sure you don't want a younger woman? I go, no. I get much younger than you, dear. I get down in the stupid zone, right? I get down into, you know, they're on social media and that's all they want to talk about, shit they saw on social media. No, I don't want to go younger than that. But it's still the younger women, whether it's here in Mexico where I live or in the U.S., Europe, other places I go, it's the younger women that come on to me. And it's funny because I'll work with guys. Maybe they get in their mid-30s, close to 40, and they'll go, Robert, help me. You know, before I get any older, I've got to figure out how to get a young woman. I go, what? We shooting for junior high age? You know, what exactly is it in your target? Because here's the deal. The older I get, the more I'm attractive to even younger and younger women. Now, also, there's a really nice mathematical figure. The older a man gets, the more younger women there are. You know, they just keep being born, you know. And so the population below us of women keeps growing, right? So that's good. There's more and more younger women if that's what you want. But there's actually an evolutionary proof to a guy who's, let's say, mid-40s or later, 50s, 60s, I'm 68, who is still alive, number one. That's a good social proof, good evolutionary proof. You're alive and you're older than 50 because our ancestors didn't live to be older than that. If you're in halfway decent shape, hopefully good shape, hopefully you can tuck your shirts in. Hopefully, I mean, don't tuck your shirts into your shorts with your sandals and tube socks, but, and you dress halfway decent, you know, maybe wear a decent watch, you know, you can groom yourself, you have fun, you enjoy life, you got some maturity, you got some experiences under your belt. That is all a evolutionary and social proof to younger women that's wired into their DNA. That guy's got good genes. He'll not only father healthy babies because he's still alive in his 50s and 60s and looking healthy, right? You got to look healthy. You know, if you're fat and drinking a lot and don't even know the way to the gym, that's not going to give you that proof. But if you're taking good care of yourself into your 50s, 60s, I'll let you know about 70s, but I think it will hold. Like I said, my wife's still insecure about the younger women chasing me. It's an evolutionary proof to women. It's not in their rational brain. It's in their emotional nervous system. And they will, you'll turn their heads. They'll notice you. They'll be flirting with you. They'll be sending you indicators of interest. They'll be jutting a hip. They'll be leaning over and giving you that cleavage shot when they put, you know, the dinner on your table. They'll be walking in front of you two or three, four times. You know, they'll walk up and ask you dumb questions to get your attention. It happens. But the problem is most men don't get that. I mean, women have taught me that. Women have taught me how to pay attention to the signals that women send. We men wait for the woman to put up a billboard that says, hey, dumb shit, ask me for my phone number. They don't do that in general. In fact, it would scare me if they did. But the signals they send are subtle, and most men have never learned to read them. And it's not watching if their eyes dilate or they twirl their hair. Twirling of a hair is a sign of stupidity, not a sign of attraction. Crossing their ankles, I don't know what that means. But, you know, don't ignore the evolutionary psychologists, biologists that tell you that stuff. The signals are more obvious, but still so. It is the jutting of a hip. It's a primate behavior. It is a leaning over and giving you a little bit of a cleavage shot. It is touching you inadvertently. It is the smile. It is the eye contact. It is those things that most men tune out, and we want to be sure. We don't want to make a mistake. We don't want to misread the signal. We don't want to think, oh, she was actually looking at the guy behind me, or, you know, could that be me? So the problem is not so much choosing the woman who chooses us, because I think a lot of times men just totally are oblivious to the signals that quality women send them, and then go, well, I just can't, you know, get the kind of women to date that I want to date. So bottom line is, if you want to be happy hanging out with a woman, she better want to be with you. And she better think you're pretty fucking amazing. And she better think, I got the best. Why would I be scanning for other? Why would I go seeking the attention of others? That's the woman you want. And, you know, if we get away a little bit, just a little bit from, you know, how young is she and how attractive is she and how many augmentations does she have or how much Lululemon does she wear, you know, and my wife fits all those categories, you know, but she's also an amazing human being who's dropped out of high school at 15 because she was poor, but she has a higher IQ than I do. She had photographic memory. She gets shit done. She, you know, she'll lean into any fear. She's emotionally adaptive. She treats me like gold. This Sunday, she gave me a pedi, trimmed my eyebrows, and waxed my ears. And she complains when I don't ask her to do those kinds of things often enough. She wants to love on me. She wants, you know, to give me her full attention. And, you know, she chooses me. She chooses me every day, and I know it. There's no doubt she's choosing me. And I think she's beautiful. I think she's intelligent. And like I like to say, she likes to fuck me like a cheap Mexican whore. And she takes pride in that, right? So, and she chose me. I was walking. People said, how'd you meet Lupita? I was walking down the street in Puerto Vallarta. I heard a voice that, hola, senor, want a massage. I said, no, hoy, tal vez mañana. Not today, maybe tomorrow. Kept walking, but I liked her voice. Went back, got a massage. 6 months later, she basically propositioned me. I said, let me take you out on a date. And so she chose me. She chose me. And and now that we've been married 7.5 years, I don't have to chase her to get her to keep choosing me, right? She keeps choosing me every day. And I think this is the only relationship I've ever been in that from day one, till, you know, years later, this woman gets up every day and chooses me. I'm the man she wants to be with. And anyway, I don't think you can go wrong with that. I don't think you can go wrong with that. Did that answer your question? I mean, was that more than enough information to answer it?
That was great. And it's funny, as you were talking, there was another line that I think I got from you that's related to this, which is the biggest mistake a man makes is trying to get a woman to like him.
I think
those go in line together very well. I don't know if there's anything else on that subject you think. You know, I had Sean Smith on the show last week and we were talking
about I love Dr. Smith. He's one of my favorite human beings.
Same. And we were talking a lot about, you know, men in modern times and relationships and long-term relationships. And I brought you up during that conversation.
Did he say I'm one of his favorite people? Did he say that about me?
You'll have to watch the episode.
He takes this even really even further than I do. I mean, he's written, you know, at least a couple of books, you know, the Strategic Guide to Women
Tactical Guide to Women
and then Gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And he dives into this. Basically, he says, do not sacrifice your purpose for, you know, romance to a woman. Do not let a woman come into your life and misdirect you from your purpose, for your reason for being. And, you know, as he'll say those kind of things, he's not harsh or mean. He's kind and loving and caring person. And, you know, I've met him and his wife. I've met their adopted daughter. I've met their dog. I've been in their home. And, you know, my wife knows Shanti. He knows, and he's just an amazing human being, but he calls it like it is. If you want a happy life, I mean, don't chase that happy wife, happy life, you know, strategy. He said, you better pick a woman who not only picks you, who chooses you, who likes you, who thinks you're amazing, but a woman who makes your life easier, not more difficult. And again, I praise my wife for that regularly, of like, you know, yesterday she went to Costco in the market and picked up stuff for my smoothies and got some fruit. And, you know, I went to my urologist yesterday for a checkup after a surgery I had a year and a half ago. He, you know, prescribed me, he put me back on testosterone basic. She went and picked them up at the pharmacy for me like at 9:30 last night. And she just loves making my world easier. And I love making her life better. You know, her life has improved dramatically since she got with me. Now she does wear Lululemon and you know, drives her Jeep Wrangler Rubicon and, you know, gets to fly first class. But we joke, we compete with each other to see who can outlove and outbless the other person. And she wins. She just loves me to death. And so since I married Lupita, she's literally saved my life. I would have died 7 years ago if she didn't find the doctor that found the tumor blocking my small intestine. Not only she literally saved my life, but since being with her, I got completely out of debt, bought a house and paid for it in 3 years, launched a new business, pay off credit cards regularly, pay cash for vehicles. I'm in good health. I'm fit. I have a beautiful home. I got my beautiful pit bull lying down here at my feet. There's a guy, you know, renovating a bathroom right the other side of that wall. Anytime we need anything done, she finds it. Whether it's finding the dog, finding the guy to fix, you know, to remodel the bathroom. So my life in not just subjective ways, in quantifiable objective ways, my life has gotten significantly better since we married. And even considering economically, I earn 100% of the income and pay 100% of the bills, because she doesn't have to work outside the home. And even with me paying for a wife, two stepkids who are in private school, and, you know, she has made my life so much better that economically I'm still ahead of where I was before we got together, even with me taking on those extra, buying a house and everything that involves. That's how she's blessed my life. Now, that's choosing a woman who chooses you and blesses your life and makes it better, kind of going back to Dr. Sean T. Smith. whatever women you get involved with, if you move them in with you, if you start getting in debt together, if you buy the car together, you know, rent, buy the rent together, what she said, that woman better be making your life better as you're making her life better.
Yeah. One of the things I have so loved about your work, Robert, is the, you know, unabashed pride and placing importance on, you know, a lot of the masculine qualities that we've talked about today, but also you talk a lot, and I don't hear this in the adjacent space that you operate in with some of the more hardcore red pill guys, about the importance of being open-hearted. And, you know, I know—
No, you don't see that on red pill forums, so you don't see it on the Reddit page. And, you know, so let me just kind of make an observation about red pill. I have no antagonism towards men who you know, dive into red pill philosophy and go read red pill forums or even try red pill techniques. For COVID, you know, I spoke at a red pill slash pickup conference. You know, the director, the guy that, you know, that runs that conference thinks highly of me. I'm there meeting lots of amazing guys who've read my book. When I spoke there, I began with it. I don't identify as red pill. I don't identify as pickup, but I do love working with men. And I asked how many men in the audience had read No More Mr. Nice Guy. Probably about 3/4 of the guys there had. And I know that their Reddit, I don't get on Reddit much, but their Substack, or I'm mixing the terms, but their group for married men and the red pill married men required reading is No More Mr. Nice Guy. So when I asked how many people read my book, and about 3/4 of the guys, I said, well, I don't know if No More Mr. Nice Guy is a gateway drug for red pill or if red pill is a gateway drug for No More Mr. Nice Guy. Because in some ways, there's a lot of underlying psychology that doesn't vary. There's a lot of things that are pretty similar. You know, I'll read The Rational Male, and a lot of stuff will go, yeah, okay, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that makes sense to me. And after a while, I go, oh, that's enough, though. But here's two things I don't like about red pill in general. One is taking the information about women, like things like hypergamy or, you know, any of that evolutionary psychology, biology stuff, and weaponizing that against women. How can we use women? How can we spin place? I'm okay with dating multiple women, but it's kind of like this ranking system. And again, that's where the quality woman concept comes. I mean, even quality man, a lot of that comes out of red pill, but basically they're saying quality man is the man, you know, that basically doesn't need women so he can use them and they'll line up to be used by him. I mean, they throw other things. He also does cold plunges and has a V-shaped body and stuff like that. But they weaponize information against women to guard themselves against these evil creatures that are out to get us. I don't think they're out to get us. Not most of them. There are gold diggers out there. But, you know, guess who enables the gold diggers? Us. Guess who enables the women? I'm going to get the names of the website wrong, but the seeking arrangements, the sugar daddies, all of that. Who the fuck is giving those women the money? Us. Who's the dumb ones in the equation here? Us. Yeah, of course, if some young, attractive women can take advantage of us dumb men, you know, giving them a bunch of money and paying their bills and taking them on trips because maybe they'll show up and not be on their phone the whole time they're hanging out with us. We're the dumb ones here. They're the smart ones. Give them credit for that, right? But we're the ones who've enabled all of that. Now, are women hypergamous? I don't think so. I don't think you can prove that they are. Women marry and stay with losers all the fucking time. They marry, you know, guys that, you know, don't have jobs. They marry drug addicts. They marry alcoholics. They marry stupid men. They marry men, fat guys. They marry losers and they get with them and stay with them. So where's hypergamy that they're always looking to trade up to the next guy? But so the issue is most people that get drawn into red pill, I think they go looking for answers, but they get this, again, this weaponized us against them version of women that they're out to get us. And most of the red pill people I know that, you know, kind of leaders and all of that are married and have daughters, right? So it's kind of curious to me, why are we weaponizing this? You know, and most of the guys that say, well, my ex was hypergamous. She left me for a dentist. And I'm going, maybe she left you because you suck in bed, or maybe because, you know, you're on the internet all the time, or, you know, it could be any number of reasons, you know, that she left. Probably not because she's purely hypergamous. So I don't like that weaponizing against women. You know, all right, don't enable the gold diggers. You know, don't pick women who don't pick you, right? Get smart, get intelligent. Follow, you know, read Sean T. Smith's book, Gatekeeper. Get intelligent about how you interact with women. You set the terms. You set the tone and lead. You invite her into your great life. Don't try to go fit into her life. Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster. Never seen it work as a marriage therapist. So I don't like that. I don't like the weaponizing. And I don't like the hierarchy of men who are like, oh, we're alpha. We're red pill. You're beta. You're blue pill. You're average frustrated chump. I don't like anything where men are putting brothers down, right? Let's lift each other up. Let's help each other. Let's support each other. Let's be tribe, right? And so just that ego, well, you know, I'm quality male. I'm red pill. I'm alpha. Not horseshit. Just because you post a lot of shit you read on the internet, and you still live in your mother's basement and don't know how to talk to a woman, that doesn't really make you red pill, right? So that's what I generally don't like. Is there valid information out there? Yeah. Do most men that initially get drawn into red pill, which it makes sense, there's a void of good information for men out there. So if they get attracted to Andrew Tate, if they get attracted to red pill, does it make sense? Yeah. But it's funny. Most men I talk to, that at least I bump into, that mention they, you know, got into red pill for a while, often come out the other side of it. They come out the other side, maybe, you know, they learn a few things, but they kind of come out the other side because I think most don't really like, again, that us against them version of women and weaponizing, you know, things against women. And I don't know if they pick up on the hierarchy within men, but once they kind of become aware of it, they go, yeah, that is true. So I think most people that get into it are naturally looking for answers and maybe get some. And maybe try some things, but often then kind of come through the other side saying, you know what? I don't want to be just calculating and closed-hearted about this. I truly do want to give love and receive love. And, you know, in workshops, I'll ask men and women, because I believe that the masculine in terms of energetic, yin and yang, I believe the masculine is the source of love. The feminine is the seeker, the consumer of love. Now, that's true. We all have a masculine and feminine side. We have that yin and yang, you know, diagram of half black, half white. I've got a masculine side. I've got a feminine side. My masculine side is the source of love. My feminine side is the seeker, the craver of love. In women, of course, their feminine side naturally is energetically bigger. And so they are seekers of love. And so I think if we recognize that we are the source of love, we have what women want. And we're going to be more satisfied connecting with men, having deep connection with men, not seeking feminine creatures to come fill up our feminine bucket with love. And we get just, you know, more conscious about connecting with men, our own masculine, husbanding our own feminine, giving to the feminine of the world from that overflow. That's, again, I think what makes us attractive. So that's kind of just kind of a little bit on the red pill. But I think there was another question that started us down that track. Remind me of what that other question was.
Well, I think it was, you know, if you don't mind, I would love to, you mentioned a word there. And this is
your show, man. Yeah. You go wherever you want to go with it. I'll talk too much about whatever you say.
The other concept that we talked about in our first interview that I've really taken away into my own life, and I've talked to so many guys about this since then, is, and you just used this word, the word tribe, and the, you know, in I've done more than 100 episodes on this show and talked to so many brilliant people, and one of my takeaways from my own interest in some of the subjects I've gotten to cover on the show is it does seem like in prehistory, the majority of men's time was spent with other guys.
And don't even go back to prehistory. Go back to about 1945, mm-hmm. World War II.
Yeah.
Prior to World War II, men, even if they were married, did not spend much time with women, including their own wife.
And there seems to be an encouragement now, or at least it's commonplace. You see it everywhere that men, so many guys are spending most of their free time with women, mostly with their wives or their girlfriends. And mm-hmm. that I asked you, I think at the close of our first conversation, if you had to give one takeaway to people who were listening to this, men who were listening to that conversation, what would it be? And you repeated yourself. You said, seek a tribe of men. And I want to just give you more space to dive into that yourself around why you think that is so important. It's something I've tried to just be way more intentional about prioritizing. And to your point, it does seem like when I do that, all other things in life become just better, more enjoyable. You talk a lot about energy a lot and how men are so rejuvenating, having that kind of collegiality and tribe. So I just want to put that to you and have you speak about that in whatever length you would like, because I think it's such an important message and such a simple message.
Don't give me that blank check to speak whatever length I want about it. Yeah, let's do this. So let's just very brief background, okay?
Yeah.
For 1.5 million years, our human ancestors were tribal. We were hunters and gatherers. We lived together. We died together. Everything was communal. Everything was shared. And basically, in those hunter-gatherer societies, there's always a tribe within a tribe. And that tribe within the tribe was basically the children, the young women pregnant, with young children, the older people that couldn't. They didn't move around a lot. They were pretty, they'd stay in one place. The men, or the able bodies, probably included women as well, but it's primarily men, would go out, hunt, gather, and battle other, men of other tribes. They would come back with the food, the furs, and fuck the women and go out and do it again. So there wasn't like the men just hanging out with the women, let me listen to your day dealing with Jessica. I want to hear all the ways that Jessica pissed you off today. And I'm all ears. I'm holding space for you. Right? That just didn't fucking happen. Right. Number one, we've never cared about why Jessica got on our woman's nerves. And we don't really want to hear the story, especially more than once. Right. So the guys were out with guys. Right. Is one reason why we're probably less verbal. We didn't need to be, talking a lot. That tribe within a tribe, that's all they had to do was talk, create hierarchies, gossip, backstabbing, prediction, alliances, allegiances, betrayals. That's why I'll make a generalization. Women are still drawn to that kind of drama. That's what they watch on television. And it's what they create in the office. And again, I'm making generalizations. I'll probably, get a few people pissed off at me. But in general, women like the drama. Men don't. We go, fuck, enough. No, enough. Give me the guy version. I don't want to hear the whole story about how Jessica pissed you off and she's just insecure and needs attention, all that. No, enough, right? Yesterday, just 2 days ago, I hurt my wife's feelings. I asked her a question about something that I wanted to know the answer about. It was about something about one of her personal relationships. And I asked her the question and she gave me the answer. And then repeated the answer 3 more times. And we're sitting on my couch here in my office, and Nala, my pit bull's in there. And during that time, Nala tore apart, which she does, one of her toys, and pulled the squeak out of it. And Nala's lying on the floor with the squeaker in her mouth, holding it with her paws, making it squeak, And I said, isn't Nala so cute? Something like that. And my wife goes, I have to go to the bathroom. Got him left. Later that evening, she says, it really hurt my feelings. You asked me about something. I was telling you about it. And then, you start, you do that. You say, well, look at that car, squirrel. Look at Nala, whatever. You interrupt me. You're not interested. It hurts my feelings. And I go, you're right. I did that. I said, my apologies. And so we talked it out. And I said, and would you like a little bit of feedback? And, maybe it wasn't the right time to give it. But I said, here's a thing for us guys. I said, you women, not just you. You women give the same story 3 times over. I heard it the first time. I understood all the facts and details the first time. Then you tell it again, all in almost the same words. And then by the third time you're telling me the same story, I've gotten it. I'm not interested anymore. I you know, my mind is going to wander. I said, you know, my apologies for not doing better at that. But I said, also, that's something you need to know. That's why I've always, you know, a woman taught me this. I tell women, give me the guy version. You know, when she comes home complaining about how Jessica did this at work, and blah, 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 and you go, wait. You, I'm a guy, right? Yeah. You want me to be your guy, right? Yeah. You don't want me to be your girlfriend? Oh, then give me the guy version. Oh, Jessica pissed me off today. Great. That's all I needed to know, right? I don't need the girl version of it. Now, again, that's just the difference between men and women. This is one of the ways we evolved over time. Okay. So we men were out there with tribe, giving each other the guy version, right? Mm-hmm. And just getting shit done and getting it done as masterfully as possible. And if the masculine is the source of love, oh yeah, I know what I was going to say earlier. I forgot that in workshops, I have men and women, I'll ask, would you rather be the giver of love or the receiver of love? And the women aren't embarrassed to say, I want to receive the love. But then they go off and go, but I just don't let the good men in. I keep them at a distance. I build walls. You know, the women then will describe all the ways they block the love that they want to receive. Now, the guys are actually a little bit more timid or shy, and they'll often come like talk to me later and they'll go, Robert, you know that question you asked? Yeah, 100%. I'd rather give love. That's the masculine. It would rather give the love. You know, that provider, protector, that just the source of love. And I define the feminine as an empty bucket with a hole in the bottom that has to be filled from the outside. And that's the feminine in us, the feminine in women, in all creatures. Okay. Feminine in Nala. She's an empty bucket that needs petted on and loved on. But she also has a strong masculine side. You know, she rips apart toys and gets a squeaker out of them. That's very masculine. That's not at all feminine. So we evolved in this way. Now, so we go 1.5 million years of being tribal. We're with men. Then we get to about 10,000 years of a more agrarian, you know, settled. We quit, you know, looking for, you know, fresh berries and fresh. We are really not so intelligent. Male ancestors said, I'm going to stay in one place. This is a good place to hang out. And there's plenty of food here. There's plenty to eat here. And I'm going to own this piece of land. I'm going to own this tree. I'm going to own this bush. I'm going to learn how to plant stuff and grow it. I'm going to own my goat. I'm going to own my woman. I'm going to own her vagina. I'm going to own the kids that come out of her vagina. That's patriarchy. Okay. Now, rightfully so, you'll hear women and feminism rail against the patriarchy. There were a lot of abuses. It led to colonialism. It led to all kinds of abuses, to dominance, to ownership relationship. But it also is about providing and protecting. So it wasn't all evil, right? So, but even during this period of about 10,000 years, since we quit being quite so tribal in general, there's still tribes that exist in this world. Even then, men tended to hang out with men. Boys, as soon as they're old enough, was with dad outside, you know, hunting, planting crop, reaping the crop, milking the cows, getting the eggs from the chickens, you know, playing sport, whatever. The boys were with their dads, their uncles, their grandfathers, their cousins in this big extended family. And the men, even if they were married, you know, came home to eat and go back outside again to work, and then came home to sleep and have sex and get up in the next morning, go out and do it again. Right? There was just not that a lot of time that men and women spent. And I'm not saying this is good, bad, right, or wrong. I'm just saying that's what's in human DNA. And then around the time of World War II, when men went off to fight the war, somebody had to build the bombs and the airplanes and the tanks and ammunition. And serve in the hospitals. So women started really taking on a lot of those roles. They came into the workplace. And then when the men came back from World War II, women are still in the workplace. Some went back home to be, you know, mothers and wives and housekeepers. I'm not saying any of this is good, bad, or right, or wrong. It's just patterns, right? But many stayed in the workplace. And then, you know, about 10, 20 years later, as feminism grew, and now a bunch of basically pissed off university professors started telling women, don't be dependent or needy on a man. You need education. You need career. Education, career are great. But they've been taught like the gospel. This is the higher aim for women. Get the education, get the career, never, ever be dependent on a man. And even being mother was really delegated to second degree status. So feminism kind of did what red pill does. You know, there's a high status, you've got career, you don't need a man. Oh, you're a housewife. You know, you're raising your kids. You know, you're homeschooling. You know, the feminism looked down on that. They got the hierarchies too. So it wasn't until around this time that men and women started working more together, you know, started moving out to the suburbs to get the house, you know, just the whole family ideal. Television kind of brought, you know, people together. And so now we've got this kind of romantic notion that, you know, oh, you know, we're going to meet the one ideal person and, you know, we're going to live happily ever after, which is, you know, the myths of fairy tales. I'm told that Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet to point out the myth of romantic love. And we love each other so much, let's kill ourselves. That's probably what a lot of people want to do after they actually move in with each other. No, I want to kill you. It's kind of like in marriage therapy, there's a marriage therapy joke that, you know, people, once they live together long enough, they resort to what's called hall sex. You know, they pass each other in the hall and go, fuck you, or fuck you. So that's basically how things go. Men and lifelong pair bonded monogamous relationship between members of the opposite sex are not part of our human DNA. I'm a marriage therapist by training. They don't work because they're not meant to work. But I also think they're very powerful personal growth machines. Okay. So here's what I teach and preach. All right. The majority of us men, you know, if we're straight, if we're heterosexual, we do typically want a good woman in our life or a few, you know, that we seem to be actually kind of, you know, moving a lot more in that direction as well. That open relationships and polyamory is becoming much more the norm, or at least more openly discussed as a norm than it used to be. So most of us, you know, we want a relationship. We want a good woman. You know, a lot of men, you know, about the time they hit 35, 40, 45, you know, they've been really focused on careers. Say, you know, I want to find a good woman, get married. I want to have a family. I want kids. And I always say, well, that's going to make you suffer. And they go, why? Because getting married will make me suffer. Yeah, but that's not my reason. Well, having kids will make me suffer. Yeah, that too, but that's not my reason. Whenever you start dating with like an intention, like I want to find the mother of my kids, dating actually gets kind of weird, right? You know, like I would not have married my wife, Lupita, if I was going off a strict checklist, career, education, no kids, spoke my language, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, she was poor, high school dropout, living in poverty, hardworking woman, two kids, did not speak my language. You know, 22 years younger than me, but she's just been an amazing partner because I wasn't looking for anything. And it just evolved the way it evolved without me trying to force it. Like, is she going to be a good mother to my children? You know? So what I preach to men, you know, all right, we want a good woman in our life. And I used to tell couples when they walked in my office, the best thing you guys can do for your marriage is both of you have good same-sex friends. And I think for men, having good male friends in your life, not just buddies you knew from college that maybe you talk to every 2 years, good same-sex friends in your life. That's the foundation of a healthy relationship. In fact, I even know women used that, smart women would ask me when I was dating, you know, do you have guy friends? A smart woman knows to ask that question. You know, and you know, back, you know, when I'd say, hey, I got one or two, you know, they're kind of, oh. But, you know, I can tell you right now, yeah, got a lot of them. Got a lot of good guy friends. And I'm in touch with them regularly. And I see them. You know, we're talking about Austin before the call. Last time I was in Austin two, 3 months ago, I went out to dinner two or three different times with, you know, 6 to 8 different guy friends that I know in Austin, Texas. So whenever I go anywhere, I got guy friends around the world. And I'm in contact with them. So I've got good guy friends. And I think that is a core foundation of why my marriage is why this marriage has done so well, because I have just so many more guy friends in my life and I'm connected to them. Tomorrow I have a call with 6 other guys that I've been in a group with for 6 years. We talk every other week for 90 minutes and we're committed for life, right? This may outlast any of our marriages, this group of guy friends, because we're committed. But we're going to get in touch with each other every other week and then stay in touch in between those calls. And I go visit these people whenever I can. One of the guys in my group invited me to go to Pearl Jam with him in LA back in May. And he had tickets for two nights. He's a big Pearl Jam fan. Took his wife one night, took me the second night. Well, it tells you where I rank, you know, and what that relationship means, right, as men. So that's the tribe. I know in my second marriage with the wife that didn't want to have sex with me after our honeymoon, you know, once it probably took me 5, 6, 7 years into that marriage to really get connected with men, get into a men's group, start connecting, start going to the gym more regularly, playing some basketball, started a softball team. And then I'd take road trips. I made a group of friends. We'd take road trips to go watch baseball around the country, around the U.S., different ballparks, you know, Fenway in Boston, you know, Yankee Stadium, you know, been to L.A., been to San Francisco, been to a lot of ballparks. And I'd come back from those retreats with the guys. And my wife, who rarely wanted to have sex, would say, you know, I find you so attractive when you come back. Well, number one, I went away. And, you know, kind of like that song by Pink, you know, go away and let me miss you. You know, when you come back, I want to kiss you. That's a good song, actually. No, you can't stay and take a shower. Leave. Go away. I want to miss you. So I went away, but I was with men, you know, all this masculine energy. And, you know, it's not like we were super highly conscious. I mean, we didn't go out and pick up on women or anything, but we were just told the same dumb guy jokes over and over again and just had fun. Guys being with guys. We're not trying to feel, are you happy? Are you having a good time? Is this what you wanted to do? Where do you want to eat tonight? Like we do if we're out with our woman, right? We're just going, hey, let's go get steak. I'm in. Yeah, let's just go buy tickets from a scalper outside the stadium. Yeah, let's go do it. You know, it was just guys being with guys, having a good time, filling our buckets up, come home. Our women go, oh, you're back. Yeah, you look good. You know, yeah. And we've just been telling dumb guy jokes with guys. Now imagine what that's like if you actually go and get like really conscious with a group of men and maybe do some pretty deep conscious work and work at opening our hearts and work at really embracing that masculine part of ourselves. And we bring that home to if we have a woman to our woman, or if we're single, just, you know, bringing that just that attraction that it creates, like I talked about earlier in our conversation. So I'm just such a big fan of men having good guy friends, of having tribe. I don't think it's going to change, for example, that, oh, we're going to start eliminating women from our life and go back in time, you know, get in the Wayback Machine and go back. That's not going to happen. And I don't know that it should. But if we're going to spend significant amounts of time with women, let's have that good foundation of good, conscious, loving, giving, you know, fun, intelligent guys in our life that we stay connected with on a real regular basis. I'm just convinced it blesses every part of your life. Everything is better when you got that foundation.
I love that, Robert. And I know we're getting close to the end of our hour together. And I wanted to give space, and maybe this is a good place to close, to what I think is one of your, Sean mentioned this to me last week when we were talking about how you're involved.
Did he say I'm one of his favorite people?
I think it was implicit in what he was saying about you that was the case. But he mentioned Integration Nation. Yeah. And we talked a couple years ago and you used the word integrate or integrated man during that conversation. I know that's something you think a lot about. I'd love to close our conversation by giving you an opportunity to talk about what you're up to there, what the goal is, what the mission is, why you're involved in starting this initiative, and anything you think, you know, men that might be listening to this could benefit from.
Yeah, you know, I talk in No More Mr. Nice Guy about becoming an integrated man. Now, when I finished writing what I thought was the final draft of No More Mr. Nice Guy, I sent it off to an editor, and he gave me a lot of feedback. Most of it pissed me off, but most of it was right. He said, well, it's kind of redundant. You give too many examples. I go, okay, I could clean that up. So it shrunk from being like that to not like that. He said, also, you're telling, it's a self-help book. I said, he said, you got to tell people what to do. I go, I'm a therapist. You don't tell people what to do. He goes, this is a self-help book. So that's where all of the Breaking Free activities came from. Is okay, here's a strategy for applying what you're reading in the book. The other piece that he said is, okay, basically you're telling men what not to be. Don't be a nice guy. But you really have to tell them what it is they're becoming, or maybe not so much becoming, but because nice guy syndrome, I say recovery is not about becoming a different person or a better person. It's about becoming more you. It's letting go of all the things you've been packing around thinking that's what will make you lovable or help you get your needs and wants met. But nice guy syndrome is letting go of that stuff we've been packing around and loving ourselves more. And that's what I call an integrated male, where we can take all aspects of ourselves. Like a good buddy of mine told me one time when I was really struggling with something that I'd done that really hurt me because it hurt other people. He goes, Robert, you can be a dick, but you're not a dick. He says, once you integrate those two together, you'll be okay. You'll learn from what you need to learn. And that's what being integrated means. We can take these traits about ourselves that we like. You know, I'm intelligent, I'm loving, I'm giving, I'm generous, I'm caring, I'm open-hearted, I'm conscious, whatever. And take that shadow stuff. You know, I can be a dick. I can be hurtful. I can be mean-spirited. I can interrupt my wife when she's answering the question I asked her, right? And can I own all of that and be a what you see is what you get person, rough edges and all? That's an integrated man, right? I don't have to become better. I just have to be more me and kind of nothing hidden, nothing half-assed. So that's the integrated man part of it. And I've always, really since I joined my first 12-step group 30 plus years ago and began, didn't know what I was doing at that time, but I was releasing toxic shame by just sharing and revealing things about me, then got into therapy, then got into a men's group, and then other men's groups, and then started leading men's groups. I've always realized the strength of community for helping men do their deepest work. I say in No More Mr. Nice Guy, don't try to do this alone. Because that's what we nice guys, that's what men do, but it's what nice guys especially. Oh, I'll read the book. I'll watch a few YouTube videos. I'll watch a couple of Dr. Glover's interviews, you know, blah. Then I've got it. No, it doesn't. To release shame, you actually need other people. You need safe people. To really work on lowering your anxiety, you really need the support of other people to do that. To live with purpose and passion, you need people to support you and hold you accountable. For example, I'm not a big fan of discipline. Well, I'll just get disciplined enough to do this stuff. For example, when I decided I wanted to meditate regularly, I hired a meditation coach several months ago. We got 100 consecutive days of meditation. Never done that before. But I got a coach to help me do that. And then he went on to create a class or community around that for other people. I joined a kind of a fitness challenge earlier this year, 2023. In over 8 weeks, I could see I leaned out a little bit and got a little bit of definition. I thought, okay, I want to take it to the next level. So at a workshop a month or so later, I was leading here in my house. I just mentioned, I need to find a nutrition coach. Two guys go, I know one. One was a personal trainer. One was actually working. So I hired a nutrition coach. Been working with her for a couple months now. I've dropped 3 or 4 kilos in a couple months, and now we're going to work on getting me to be that going back to what we're talking about, being that old guy with evolutionary social proof, even more lean, strong, tuck my shirt into my pants, look good in a suit, look good naked. You know, part of his ego, but more than that is. You know, my father died of a stroke, 2009. My brother died of complications from diabetes 3 months later. My sister died of a heart attack and complication of diabetes 11 months later. My mother had a stroke 4 years ago. And I want to give another good 20, 25 years to the work I do. So I want to take care of this container. But my point is, we do all of this better working with coaches, mentors, therapists, groups, tribes, support systems, accountability systems. Don't do it alone. So in terms of Integration Nation, about 3 years ago, a guy attending a workshop with me who taught mortgage lenders, he had a university where he taught mortgage lenders, said, Robert, you need to start a men's membership program. My wife has a sourdough bread membership program. She made $750,000 in the last 2 years. What the fuck? Sourdough bread? I still got to figure out what she was doing, So I started working on building a community of men that will, I call it my legacy. I want it to outlive me. I want, when I'm dead and gone, I want a community that continues on, you know, built on things that I've taught. You know, I without going too much into detail, I want to help men know they are love. They are lovable. They are the source of love. I want men to change the world by embracing their own lovableness and overflowing that love to the world. So that's what I want to leave behind. Now, how many more years do I got? I don't know. Almost died about 7 years ago. So I'm already on, I'm playing on house money, right? Mm. It's all gravy time now. So anything I get done is beyond, you know, my expectations. So we launched Integration Nation almost a year ago, July 17th of 2022. This is coming up on July 2023. We're about 600 men worldwide. My intention, we got over 55 virtual calls a month that men can attend. Now, you wouldn't sleep any if you attended all of those, because they're all times of day and night. But I'm on a call every Thursday. I either teach a lesson, do an Ask Me Anything, or I interview people. I've interviewed Sean T. Smith. Just a week ago, I interviewed Warren Farrell, who wrote The Myth of Male Power and the Boy Crisis. This week, I'm interviewing Robert Augustus Masters, who wrote To Be a Man. I'm trying to get the OGs, get the old guys, you know, the original gangsters. Later in July, I'm interviewing Mark Manson, and then I'm interviewing Preston Smiles, and then Orion Teraband coming up this fall. So, you know, just I want to, you know, just keep introducing these people to my community and introducing them to these really great people. So I'm on a call every Thursday. And then like I said, we have up to 55 calls that my certified coaches lead. We're beginning to plan a couple of twice a year biannual conferences that meet around the world. We got in-person meetups. It's just, man, I just want to build a robust, you know, primarily virtual community to where any man in the world who wants to be a part of a men's program, men's group, will have access. So, like I said, we're a year into it. It's going well. Men are loving it. And I see it as my legacy. I was toying with the idea of semi-retirement about 3 years ago. And I did take 3 months off in the summer, did a sabbatical, didn't do interviews, didn't see clients. I thought, no, I still got more work to do. That's been when the membership program idea, somebody, like I said, introduced to me. And I thought about 2 years ago, fuck retirement, I'm in it 20 more years. So I keep rolling that 20 years forward. So at that time, it probably would have been about 66, 67. Now, 88, I'm shooting for 88. 90, let's just go for 90. I'm in it. I'm going to do my damnedest to take good care of me, keep my body healthy, keep my mind sharp. I'm at the peak of my ability to influence the world, influence men. And I've got a bigger platform as maybe anybody out there in terms of who I can reach. And so I'm going to take advantage of that. I see it as my fate. I see it as my destiny. I see it as my legacy. So, you know, this is just a manifestation of what I'm trying to do to make sure every man who wants masculine community, open-hearted, conscious, playful. We dance at the end of every single call. We put on music and we just dance. Last week, Dr. Farrell picked Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire. I hadn't danced to that song in years. So, you know, here's 60 men on a call on Zoom, you know, just bouncing around the room, playing air piano to Jerry Lee Lewis. We have fun. Right. And that's great masculine initiation. You know, it takes, you know, a little bit to go, okay, I'm going to move my body on Zoom, you know, with about, you know, 60 other guys, you know, at the same time. It's a masculine initiation. You get comfortable feeling uncomfortable. So that's what we're trying to do, build tribe, build masculine initiation, build community, build family, help men be that amazing, loving influence on the world that we are meant to be. So that's really what I'm up to.
I love it. I love it. I love that you're staying in the game and you're so committed and excited about this. Final question, where can men go who are interested in that to learn more, to sign up, to get involved?
Okay. Integration Nation is integrationnation.net. So integrationnation.net. If they want to just check out my website, which is under construction, we're doing an update on that. It's drglover.com, drglover.com. It has my courses, my workshops, podcasts, just a few other goodies there. So check out drglover.com, integrationnation.net.
Love it. Robert, great to see you again. Hope we can do this again sometime in the future.
I expect we will. Thank you for inviting me back again. And I look forward to a future invitation.
Absolutely. Thanks again, man.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Keep Talking. If you're finding value in this podcast, please consider supporting the show via the links below on Venmo, PayPal, or Patreon. Your support helps to make these conversations possible.